This is how it was. It can feel that way again, but in a different light. Commissioners and athletes will talk about the return and the role of sports as the country transitions from lockdown and looks for social justice and change. On the Sports Center special, The Return of Sports.
I have the privilege of hosting that tonight. It's 2 hours. We'll talk about social justice. We'll talk about the role sports can play. We'll talk about the return during the coronavirus pandemic and much more. Interviews with, among others, the commissioners Adam Silver and Gary Bettman and Don Garber and Rob Manfred and Kathy Engelbert and Roger Goodell and a host of athletes and coaches and a medical professional to talk about all we will. You know, I've made the comment many times over the course of these last few months as we've been living, in particular through the pandemic, that there are always more questions than there are answers. We will go in search of a lot of those answers tonight. And then there's been so much talk about social justice and what exactly the role is that sports can play in that. We have lengthy discussions about that tonight as well. It's 9 Eastern here tonight on ESPN and the ESPN app. We hope that you will be with us then. Meanwhile, I have a terrific hour coming up right now. It's time to get up with the NBA, where some of the most famous voices are arguing against coming back to play. Are they right? Is the return in jeopardy? Stephen A. off the top. Then, a month from the deadline, it looks less and less like a deal for Dak and Dallas. So where does it go from there? We'll talk about it. And don't miss Charles Barkley live on everything in the world of sports, on the court and off. He's a half hour away as we get up with you on ESPN. Our top story this morning, Kyrie Irving asked NBA players to take a stand and sit out the resumption of the season in Orlando during a call with nearly 100 players Friday night. On the 90-minute call, Irving reportedly made the case that resuming the season would be detrimental to the players' work on social justice and police reform. Dwight Howard agrees. In a statement to CNN, he said in part, "I agree with Kyrie. Basketball or entertainment period isn't needed at this moment and will only be a distraction. Sure, it might not distract us, the players, but we have resources at hand the majority of our community don't have. And the smallest distraction for them can start a trickle-down effect that may never stop. Especially with the way the climate is now, I would love nothing more than to win my very first NBA championship, but the unity of my people would be an even bigger championship that's just too beautiful to pass up." Steven Jackson, meanwhile, offered these thoughts.
Playing basketball is going to do one thing. Take all the attention off the task at hand right now, what we fighting for. Everybody going to be worrying about the playoffs. They're going to have all that blasted all over the TV. And nobody's going to be talking about getting justice for all these senseless murders by these police. And nobody's going to be focusing on the task at hand, bro. None of these white owners have spoken up. None of them are taking a stand. Yeah, they might post a video when the season starts or saying what we should do, but they ain't doing nothing. Playing basketball ain't going to do nothing but make them money and take the attention of what we fighting for, what we marching for. It's bigger than all of us, and it's bigger than the game, and I'm sad that we still got to explain that to people, bro.
Patrick Beverly of the Clippers sees it differently. He tweeted, "Hooper, say what you want. If King James says he's hooping, we're all hooping, not personal only business. Hashtag stay woke." Adrian Wojnarowski has a lengthy piece on ESPN.com with the very latest on this. He joined us earlier this morning.
You know, the players have taken this weekend to talk about how they can use that platform that is going to be available to the league with the restart, with the eyes of the world through television, and using that to continue the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, our sense is that most players want to play, want to resume the season, but certainly an overwhelming amount want to make sure that the league, the Players Association, work together to further this cause.
Jay Will is back with us this morning, and Stephen A. Smith has returned from a little time off. And, Steve, it's great to see you. I'll start with you. What is your reaction to what Kyrie and Dwight Howard and several other NBA players have said, suggesting that they should not return and resume the season?
I completely disagree with them, and I think they sound foolish. Let's get this out of the way right now. I've been waiting to talk about this, and I can't wait to get into this more heavily on First Take. I respect the fact that obviously everything's going on. You can't be a black man and not respect what we're seeing, particularly from these young warriors out here taking to the streets and making sure that they do everything that they can to raise awareness to what's going on and bring attention to it. But the real work is going to be done by other people within the legal profession and beyond after the awareness is brought to their attention and you buffer them with the level of support monetarily and otherwise that they may require. You're Kyrie Irving and you're Dwight Howard. If you are talking about not going back to work because of the coronavirus, nothing to talk about. Everybody has the right to feel the way that they feel in terms of their own individual health, the health of their loved ones, who they're going to be near, all of that stuff. That is a separate subject. But to sit up there and imply that at this particular moment in time that sports should not exist and we shouldn't be going back to work because of racial inequality, prejudice, police brutality, et cetera, et cetera. These are things that have been going on for decades, if not more. Some would say centuries, obviously, when we're talking about racial oppression. So if that's the case, then there was no reason for anybody, whether it's your forefathers, your ancestors, or anybody in between, to ever show up to work. The reality is that you have a job to do. If you're Kyrie Irving, you're hurt, you're sitting out anyway in all likelihood. You're Dwight Howard, you want to pass up the opportunity to win a championship for the first time because you want to bring attention and awareness to this? Fine. I don't recall Adam Silver, the commissioner of the National Basketball Association, or anybody in the world of sports at this particular moment in time prohibiting or trying to deny or stop players from putting forth their due diligence to bring attention to the issues that have ravaged our society and has been ravaging our society. So to use that as an excuse not to show up to work, and I don't mean excuse as if they're looking for an excuse. I'm sure that their feelings are sincere and heartfelt. That's not what I'm saying here. What I'm saying is, that's no reason not to show up to work. The fact that racial oppression has existed, it's going to exist after this summer. It's going to exist next year. It's going to exist a year after, a year from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. Anybody in our society that thinks this thing is going to be completely eradicated is fooling themselves. You're always going to have to deal with these things. So that is not an excuse not to show up to work. To do your job. You can fight the fight while still showing up to work. And that's why I think that Kyrie Irving and Dwight Howard are a bit ill-informed here. Not to mention the fact that if you don't show back up to work, excuse me, you're not just losing money. The owners are going to lose money. As a result, collective bargaining talks are going to reopen. And the money that they lost and the money that they're going to project to have lost and will continue to lose is going to come into the equation, which means it's going to have a residual impact, not just on the players, but all the hundreds of thousands of employees that the leagues themselves employ, assuming all the leagues took a similar position to what Kyrie Irving and Dwight Howard are proclaiming should be taken. So I think it's just ill-advised for them to say what they're saying. I think they need to do a better job of doing more homework and make sure their position is tightened before they utter such things, because I don't think it makes any sense to take the position that they took.
Jay, I'm going to come to you in a minute, but Steve, I want to follow up on that quickly if I can. Let me paraphrase again what Steven Jackson just said in a soundbite that we played moments ago. Essentially, he said, once the NBA season starts up again, that's what everyone will be focused on. That's what everyone will be talking about. And essentially, they will stop talking about all the things that we've been talking about. So what is your reaction to that thought? That seems to be the concern he's expressing. Stephen A., what do you think of that?
Well, I respectfully disagree with my brother Steven Jackson, who I got a lot of love and respect for. And the reason why I respectfully disagree is because if the players themselves, the professional athletes themselves, the sports world itself is committed to maintaining the level of attention that they've brought to the equation, I don't think it subsides in the mind's eye of the viewing public. Not to mention the fact, let's remember what the goals are here, okay? We want to eradicate racism, racial oppression, and things of that nature. But how are you going to go about doing that? I've been talking for the last 2 weeks. How about making it a federal hate crime for a police officer to shoot and kill an unarmed black man? How about contacting the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, led by Sherrilyn Ifill, who's done an outstanding job? She used to work in concert with former Attorney General Eric Holder while he was the AG with the Obama, under the Obama administration. The work, the groundwork has been put into place. The objective of professional athletes and the public at large is to elevate the level of awareness and transition transition that to and transform that to people who have the knowledge, the know-how, and the power to do something about it from a legal perspective. When we're talking about getting things done, that's the kind of language we should be speaking at this particular moment in time. Because simply protesting in the streets, okay, is not going to get it done. I'm not saying you don't do it. I'm saying you don't limit yourself to it. You got to have a plan of action, and the action has to be profound in a sense that legitimately causes change, as opposed to allowing us to receive lip service and thinking that's going to get it done. I'd rather have federal legislation, fellas, than guys taking a knee. I want both, but I'd rather have the federal legislation. Guys taking the knees are symbolic, but in the end, without the federal legislation, what are we really talking about here?
Jay Williams, floor is yours.
Yeah, I'll just be additive to what Stephen A. Smith said, because I said this in the first hour, and both those comments mirror each other about where my head is as it relates to whether players should boycott or not. I disagree, you know, vehemently with, you know, Jax and Kyrie on this. And we all are in this together, first and foremost. But, you know, Stephen A., you said it. What are actionable items that you can take? And imagine this. If you were an NBA player, Adam Silver, for most of his career, has been seen as progressive and also practical and reasonable. If you have players have a set list of requests that you want your individual owners to address state by state to push for legislation, then make that contingent upon you playing. And I do think by playing, by having a platform, which is the largest in the world each and every day, imagine if players, to every question that was addressed their way in unison, responded by saying, Black Lives Matter. Or if they responded by saying Rashad Brooks, Trayvon Martin, Ahmaud Murray, like going through all these names and answering all these questions, that allows you to sustain the conversation for another 2.5-3 months. And your voices will be uplifted instead of you deciding not to play while other sports leagues will play, which will be a distraction for Americans. And then your voices, unless you're LeBron James or a Kevin Durant, will be diminished and you won't be heard because people will move on. So how do you keep that conversation at the forefront, which I think is imperative for sustainability?
Go ahead, Steve.
Well, here's the thing. Let me say this to you, Greeny. Here's the bottom line. What? Listen, nobody is advocating not taking a knee, not protesting, not joining the fight to bring awareness and attention to the plight that has plagued our society. Nobody's advocating that. Let's be clear. But in the same breath, what is that alone going to accomplish? I got to be honest with you, Greeny. Somebody black got to say this. So I'm going to say this, okay? I appreciate the level of sensitivity that has been exhibited by white folks throughout America, particularly over the last 2 weeks. We need to listen. We need to hear. I get all of that. But if you think for 1 second that is enough, please, it's not. Let's be very, very clear about that. I don't give a damn about anybody's apology. I don't give a damn about anybody's elevated level of sensitivity. I don't give a damn about people talking about, well, guess what? It's okay to take a knee. Let's do it. Let's do it. Baker Mayfield, J.J. Watt, and others. I incredibly appreciate that. I understand that. But without real change from the power brokers, then it doesn't matter. So when we talk about stuff, when we talk about an end game, and I'm sure Steven Jackson, this is a goal of his. Obviously, he was hit on a personal level because George Floyd was his boy, and I totally understand that. But we got to talk about federal legislation. Make it a federal hate crime, okay? When you had the incident with Eric Garner in Staten Island, when you talk about what transpired, Newark, New Jersey, Ferguson, Missouri, and beyond, when we talk about consent decrees, that's basically the DOJ, the Department of Justice, negotiating with police departments to hold police officers more accountable. This groundwork that has taken place in the United States of America over the last 5 years, we need to be pushing for more of that throughout the nation to make sure that we're police officers are going to be held accountable. You don't get to skirt around issues, okay? Civilly, not just legally, okay? You got to do all of these things. What's the end game here? In the end, that's what we're talking about here. Nobody disagreed with Colin Kaepernick taking a knee. Not if you're black. We appreciate the fact that he took a knee. We appreciate the reasons why he took a knee. We understood all of that, and we sided with him 1,000%. Where people went their separate ways was that after the kneeling took place, we said, now what? What do you want and how are we going to go about getting it? And there didn't appear to be a plan. In the end, that's what this comes down to. The protests are definitely legitimate and profound. We get all of that. We can't ignore it. Pay attention to it. But what's the end game? We have to answer those questions. And without answers to those questions, we damn sure shouldn't be talking about not going back to work because of racial oppression. If that's the case, black folks would have been unemployed for centuries now because we've been dealing with racial oppression. That is not a reason not to go back to work, particularly in this day and age with the advent of social media, the commission of the National Basketball Association, and everybody in between doing their role, playing their role in bringing attention and awareness to these issues. They connect with the power brokers that can ultimately provoke the change that we're all insisting upon. That should be the agenda. Nothing short of it. Let's keep our eyes on the prize here. I don't think guys are doing that right now. Not with the kind of statement that Kyrie Irving and Dwight Howard have made. And that's why I disagree with them.
The protests are a means to an end. Stephen A. Smith is ready to go. 45 minutes until First Take this morning. Steve, it's great to have you back. Jay, you'll be back with us a little bit later this hour, and we will be joined by Charles Barkley as we continue this conversation about whether or not players should come back and play. We'll also go on the court with Charles. We'll have him for a plenty of time in this hour. And then coming up next, being the highest paid quarterback has its perks, but I'll show you why history says paying the quarterback generally doesn't work out. That's next. Get up on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back. A 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We're back on Get Up, and 1 month from today, July 15th, is the deadline for Dak Prescott and the Cowboys to reach a long-term contract extension. But I did a little dive into this, and what I found is that being the highest-paid quarterback in the NFL doesn't always work out so well.
I'm not going to tell Dak Prescott, you need to take less money.
I'm Patrick Mahomes. I'm taking all of the money. It's not my responsibility to help you manage the cap.
A lot of your teammates are going to go the bigger the pie you have.
All he's going to really want in the end is just to be the highest paid.
So, Dak, Deshaun, Patrick, you want to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL? Who wouldn't? But I warn you, history says all that money comes at a price. Going back just 4 years, Joe Flacco became the highest paid in March of 2016. He would never start another playoff game for the Ravens, who drafted a successor 2 years later. Flacco held the mark for just 119 days. Andrew Luck replaced him. Luck would start just 33 more games in his career and retire at 29. Less than a year later came Derek Carr as highest paid, and no quarterback has lost more games in the NFL than he has since. Matt Stafford came next, hasn't been back to the playoffs. Then came Jimmy G, who tore his ACL in his third game. 33 days later came Kirk Cousins, missed the playoffs that year. 50 days later, Matt Ryan, so did he. Aaron Rodgers was next, he became the highest paid, and promptly had a losing season in which his coach got fired. And finally, currently, Russell Wilson, who will likely be surpassed at least once, if not more than that, in the next 12 months. In all, I guess it's kind of like the cover of Madden. Everybody wants it, but it doesn't always end well. So we did that, Lewis, with a little bit of a tongue in our cheek. Obviously, if anyone is going to offer to make you the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, you're going to take it. But the reality is that those things are not in a vacuum, right? I mean, there is a robbing from Peter to pay Paul element of this, and all these teams have to take that into account.
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously there's only so much money to go around, but I will say this, okay? If you have a franchise quarterback, I would much rather secure that position and really rely on my ability to identify, draft, and develop players around him than to constantly be on that hamster wheel of trying to look for another quarterback to replace the one that it just let go down the road because he got too expensive. I think it's much easier to build out the rest of the roster than to try and find that franchise quarterback. And in many of those situations that you just referred to right there, whether it be with guys like Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers, Derek Carr, Russell Wilson, Joe Flacco, in many of those situations, it wasn't necessarily a lack of money going around available to go around to the other players that contributed to their teams not having the kind of success that they need to. A lot of times, look, football is a game that is just littered with nuance, and really just sometimes luck plays a big part of it too, as far as how successful organizations can be. And you deal with a lot of things, whether it be bad coaching decisions, injuries, you know, bad strategic decisions, you know, during the course of a football game. A lot of those things come into play when you're looking at whether or not organizations that pay franchise quarterbacks are then ultimately able to be successful. We're going to see it happen again in the next, you know, maybe 6 to 12 months with Pat Mahomes. Obviously, Kansas City is very much so aware of the fact that Pat could really tell them, you know, I'm going to name my price and you're going to hit my price regardless of what it does to the rest of the football team. They're very much so aware that he could possibly do that to them, but they are also trying to stress to him the fact that, look, there are other players that we need to have around you if we want to continue to win Super Bowls. And I think the teams are always trying to strike that delicate balance, but I will say this. I'm not one of those guys who believes that you just cannot win because you paid a franchise quarterback. I think it, without a doubt, is an overall organizational effort. It's something that you have to make sure that your organization is locked up airtight in terms of coaching, player procurement, player development, player nutrition, making sure player rehab, keeping players healthy, using them in the proper way. I think all those things come into play, but I would much rather have that position solidified than not.
Of course. Me too. And maybe the best way to look at this is something that Orlovsky said on the show a long time ago, which is the place you really get in trouble is when you start paying good players great player money. So no one in their right mind is going to argue with paying Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson. But without meaning disrespect to them, when Joe Flacco and Derek Carr wind up in that situation because they're just the next ones in line, that's where teams get themselves in trouble.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think sometimes, look, obviously quarterbacks benefit from that phenomena, okay? The guys who are starters are always waiting for, hey, man, I just can't wait for my contract to come up because I know I'm going to get paid whether I deserve it or not, whether I'm in the category of the elite players or not. And I think teams, contract negotiators in particular, have to be very careful with that, and they have to be mindful of that. And there has to come a point in time where you draw a line in the sand and say, hey, look, we're already paying you much more than subjectively we think you deserve, but we're not going to go any further because you know that that player is not able to make up for the difference that you will, you know, that you will suffer in terms of not being able to sign some other players like a Pat Mahomes could make up that difference, and Kansas City is fully aware that he can. Like Aaron Rodgers can make up that difference, or he could at one point in time in his career, and they're very fully aware of that in Green Bay. There's no question you have to be aware of that. There's no question you have to be conscious of that. But if you have one of the very best, don't ever let him get away.
For sure. That's why I keep saying they should have a separate salary cap just for the quarterbacks. Like most geniuses, I won't be fully appreciated until long after my time. Lewis, thank you very much. Tomorrow night on ESPN Boxing, our main event features top-ranked bantamweight contender Joshua Greer taking on Magic Mike Plana, who's 23-1 with 12 knockouts. Coverage starts tomorrow night, 8 Eastern, on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. All right, Charles Barkley is live next. We will talk to him about much more than just the NBA, how he feels about NFL stars kneeling. Certainly will go on the NBA courts as well. The one, the only Sir Charles is next. Get up on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
We're back on Get Up as we approach the bottom of the hour, and Kyrie Irving asked NBA players to take a stand and sit out the resumption of the season in Orlando during a call with nearly 100 players Friday night. On the 90-minute call, Irving reportedly made the case that resuming the season would be detrimental to the players' work on social justice and police reform. Earlier this hour, Stephen A. Smith joined us with these thoughts.
In the end, that's what this comes down to. The protests are definitely legitimate and profound. We get all of that. We can't ignore it. Pay attention to it. But what's the end game? We have to answer those questions. And without answers to those questions, we damn sure shouldn't be talking about not going back to work because of racial oppression. If that's the case, black folks would have been unemployed for centuries now. Let's keep our eyes on the prize here. I don't think guys are doing that right now. Not with the kind of statement that Kyrie Irving and Dwight Howard have made. And that's why I disagree with them.
Really powerful conversation with Stephen A. Jay Williams with us. And the great Charles Barkley joins us here with his perspective on all of this. Charles, it's wonderful to see you again, as always. And let's start there. The point that Stephen A. essentially was making was that he disagrees with the NBA players who were saying we must keep our attention on the protests because the protests are a means to an end, and that actually it is about affecting real change when we come out the other side of this or whatever that is, that the way it looks. I'd love to hear your perspective on all of it.
Well, I thought Jay Will was great this morning, and I agree with Stephen A. I think it would be stupid to not play for two reasons. Number one, if they don't play, they're going to be out of sight, out of mind for the rest of the year. There won't be no cameras following. And, you know, LeBron is probably the most famous athlete in the United States. He won't be visible anywhere. And so us out of sight, out of mind. Also, these guys got to realize this money going to come back, and they're going to lose billions of dollars that the players could use to go into their own communities and do some great stuff. So it's not good on any front. I have no idea what Kyrie and Dwight are talking about, but it'll be a catastrophic mistake not to play.
Jay?
Well, I was going to say this too, Green, to add on to what, you know, Chuck was talking about. Like, think about what's one of the biggest vehicles that African-Americans have used to attain wealth, right? Michael Jordan became one of the richest players in the world, and he actually owns an NBA team. Like, that whole structure is feasible for other NBA players, especially with the earning potential. So if you don't come back and play, and then you jeopardize $1 billion worth of salary leading into next year, the CBA potentially being ripped up, you're also hurting future earnings for a lot of other African Americans who have a chance to deploy those resources in our communities to continue to build on that wealth gap. And I think that's something also that we have to talk about here. There's a bigger play, and I know Stephen A. Smith and Chuck talked about legislation. Like, there's, by playing and by having the biggest platform in the world, each and every day to address these issues, that's a way that I think is a better structure than just saying, hey, we're going to just go boycott and then out of sight, out of mind.
Charles, here's what I'd like to ask you. You and I are about the same age. You've been a famous person for 35 years, and I've heard you talking about race throughout that entire time, at a time when very few other people were. And so I've thought of you a lot during these last few weeks here, and I would love to just give you the floor to share whatever it is that's in your head and in your heart as we have watched the things that have happened in this country over the course of the last month.
It's been rough, man. It's been rough. First, I want to say I'm not going to get on here and be disingenuous and say I go through everything a poor black person's go through every day. You know, I've been, since I was 18, I've been pretty well known, but that does not mean I don't understand the black plight. And when you see stuff on television, it's painful. You know, you think about it, Greeny. And first of all, as a guy who has to talk about race on television, it, like any black celebrity, anytime something happened, you have to talk about it. You think about really in the last month, you saw the young man in Atlanta kill who was out for a jog. You saw the young lady in New York who just threatened a black man because she thought, if I tell the cops a black man is gonna mess with me, they're gonna come. And then you saw Mr. Floyd killed on national television. And even though, like I say, I can't sit here and act like I go through with everything a poor black person go through, if you got any humanity, you don't even have to be black. You don't even have to be black to understand humanity. That stuff is just awful. It's wrong. We need police reform. You know, we just need police reform because we need police. We need to weed out the bad cops. You know, I hear these guys getting on television, these politicians talking about defunding the police department. First of all, that would have a negative effect on the black communities. Who the black people going to call, Ghostbusters? Because they're not going to defund the police in the good white neighborhoods. So we need police reform. And that's what we need to use during this time when LeBron and Giannis and James and Russ and Kawhi and Paul George, when they got on TV every day, talk about police reform. Because like I say, the police have made some mistakes, but we need the police.
Jay?
Greeny, I just say this to add on Chuck. You know, the slogan that we're pushing that you see everywhere across the world is Black Lives Matter. I want you to think about this for a second. We're just saying we matter. That's a bare minimum standard. We exist. We want you to acknowledge that we are human, that we bleed red like you, that we are people, that we are citizens, that we are educated, that we are beyond just being something that matters. The fact that we need to have this type of conversation, just about the word matter, matter. But like, we are way beyond just mattering. Like, Chuck is a king. I am a king. Like, we have young kings and queens out there that have a chance to make a difference. And we need to continue this fight. We need to sustain and be on the same page about this fight. And it's been incredibly challenging. And I'm with Chuck. I've been lucky to play basketball. Basketball has given me a platform to talk about this and be on air. But I live in Brooklyn. I'm right here. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Okay, like I see kids struggling every single day, and that's what I try to tell them. You are a young king, you are a young queen, and we deserve more. And it's about damn time that we have a platform to talk about what we deserve, because it's been something that we've been lost in this world for a long time. And all these uncomfortable conversations, they're needed. But I'm with Stephen A and I'm with Chuck, and I've been pushing for this too. Now it's time to push for the right legislation that makes sure that these types of conversations never lose steam and that they are cemented in the fabric of our country from now moving forward.
Let's talk about one way in which the conversation right now, Charles, has been different. And to illustrate that, let's talk about Baker Mayfield, who replied to a post from a fan on Saturday asking him not to kneel during the anthem. And Baker replied by saying, "Pull your head out. I absolutely am." And then when there was a lot of response to that, he posted this message. "Everybody's so upset about my comment, doesn't understand the reason behind kneeling in the first place. I have the utmost respect for our military, cops, and people that serve our country. It's about equality and everybody being treated the same because we are all human. It's been ignored for too long, and that is my fault as well for not becoming more educated and staying silent. If I lose fans, that's okay. I've always spoken my mind, and that's from the heart." So, Charles, as we look at, in particular in the National Football League, the way the reaction was to Colin Kaepernick and his peaceful protest during the playing of the national anthem 4 years ago, the way people reacted then versus the way people, particularly high-profile white football players, are reacting now, what difference do you think that makes in the big picture?
Well, number one, it's great to have them as allies because, you know, their voices are powerful. We got to make sure they are allies. You know, Greener, this is a very slippery slope, I think, because does it make you a bad guy if you don't kneel? Because if you go back and look at Colin Kaepernick, there was only like 30 players kneeling with him. Did that make all those other black guys bad guys? I just think this is a very slippery slope. I think if you want to kneel, bless you. Thank you for the protest. But I don't think you're a bad guy because, like I said, even you going back to Drew Brees, he said what the flag meant to him. It's going to mean something different to everybody. But like I say, it does not make you a bad guy if you don't kneel, in my opinion. But if you want to kneel, we thank you for the support.
Jay?
I'll tell you what, next time Baker Mayfield says something about team leadership or doing something crazy within his team, I'm going to give him a pass. I'm going to give him a pass just for recognizing that, hey, look, Baker sees the bigger picture. But, you know, I agree with Chuck, too. This is a very challenging and arduous conversation. But I do think it is going to be interesting to see that when games do start in the NBA, MLB, NFL, if they do start, how the people who will not kneel will be viewed. And I hear what Chuck is saying, and I think personally that's right. It's slippery slope. But you know how that's going to be judged in the ecosystem of all this social unrest and tension will be interesting to watch.
Hey, Charles, I have a minute left here, and then we're going to pause, and we're going to come back and go on the court and talk about the upcoming remainder of the NBA season. But that last minute, I just want to hear whatever your final thoughts on this are.
I think all the players, not just in basketball, baseball, football, hockey, every sport, our financial situation, their financial situations are going to change because of this pandemic. If they don't think this pandemic bill is going to come due, there's something wrong with them. The bill is going to come due for the next few years in sports.
Charles Barkley is going to stick around with us, guys. Thanks. Both of you stay here. When we come back, we will go on the court. We'll look ahead to the upcoming NBA resumption of the season and the playoffs. And I also want to ask Charles about my favorite thing that's happened in sports this year. And he was right in the middle of it. We'll do all that as we continue next. Get up on ESPN.
Napa know-how.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, three iconic legends, three of the best to ever do it. Get on your feet one more time for Peyton Manning, Abby Wambach, and Kobe Bryant.
This is a great night, and to be up here being recognized alongside Abby and Kobe, two legends, makes it very special.
For me, it was never about trying to be the best player in the world or scoring more goals than anyone else. What it was about was just working as hard as I could.
We're not on this stage just because of talent or ability. We're up here because of 4 a.m. We're up here because of 2-a-days or 5-a-days. We're up here because we had a dream and let nothing stand in our way.
Best of ESPYs is presented by Capital One. Tune in to the ESPYs presented by Capital One on Sunday, June 21st at 9 p.m. Eastern.
That should be a special night. And as I continue with Charles Barkley here, we'll talk about the NBA in a minute. But we just saw Peyton Manning there. Charles, I wanted to get a quick thought on you, if I could, about what was, I believe, my favorite sporting event of the year so far, which was the match with Tiger and Phil and Brady and Peyton. And you were right in the middle of so much of that conversation and added, I tell you, I believe, so much to it. The entire thing, I knew it would be good. It wound up being so much better than I imagined. I'd love just to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, I just got to give those four guys a lot of credit, Greeny, because let me tell you something. You couldn't tell how hard it was raining on television. It was a torrential downpour for the whole 5 or 6 hours. It was one of the most fun things I did in my life. You saw Peyton. I knew Peyton and Phil, they got great, fun personalities. It was great to see Tiger and Tom loosen up a little bit. But, man, to raise $20 million and have some fun, like I say, my hat off is to those four guys. They never complained. They never complained because it was really raining hard that day.
It was spectacular. And my staff is going to kill me because I didn't tell them I was going to do this. But just that one shot that Brady hits right when you were giving him a hard time and that he spins back in, that might have been the most surprising great sports moment I've ever remembered in my entire life. What was your reaction?
Well, it was so awesome because I know Tom a little bit, and he's got a great personality. He doesn't show it a lot publicly, but it was perfect. I mean, you know, like sometimes you get a perfect moment in sports, and it was just a perfect moment, and I love being a little part of it.
It was great. Okay. Meanwhile, let us turn our attention now to the NBA. They are coming back, we overwhelmingly believe, and according to Caesars, the Lakers have the best odds to win the championship at plus 180. A 17th title for the Lakers would match the Celtics for the most in league history. Who do they have to get through? Well, the Bucks have the second best odds to win the title at plus 275. Milwaukee looking to win its first championship since 1971, when a second-year Kareem Abdul-Jabbar led them to the title. And the Clippers have the third best odds to win the title at plus 325. Kawhi Leonard could become just the third player to win a championship with three different teams in NBA history if he's able to do it. And so Jay Will jumps back with us here. But Charles, I'll start with you. Who is your favorite to win the championship when they come back?
The Los Angeles Clippers. I think they're the deepest team in the NBA. I'm really pulling for the Milwaukee Bucks, to be honest with you, because I love Giannis and what they've done in Milwaukee. But I think the Clippers, in my opinion, are going to be the favorites.
Jay?
I'm with Chuck. The Clippers is just, People, I know we've had 2.5 months off from basketball, but people forget how deep they are. Getting Reggie Jackson, who can score at will, having him combined with Lou Will, having Morris on this team that gives him another wing, another scorer from that position, and having Patrick Beverley, who gets up underneath you defensively, the way they play defensively with Montrezl Harrell being all over the place, the energy that he brings to the table in that second unit, even though he was a starter going back and forth. And then having Kawhi and PG, the question for the Clippers has always been their health. But if you've given them 2.5 months with Kawhi and PG, there's nobody that has the depth that the Clippers do.
Then let's turn our attention then, Charles, to something that your buddy Shaquille O'Neal said, which is he said that whatever winds up happening this summer, there'll be an asterisk next to it. What do you think about the legitimacy, if they're able to play a full postseason, if they're able to do what they're planning to do, how will you view the team that wins the championship?
Well, Greeny, I've been watching you a lot, way too much the last couple months. I agree with you. I think the team that wins the championship this year should get 1.5 rings. To sit out for 3 months, you got this pandemic. To go down to that bubble and win the championship would be a great accomplishment. So I agree with you. I will say one thing about Shaquille. If any of these great players get sick, that will put a damper on it. I don't think it'll put an asterisk, but I think it'll put a damper on it. But the team that wins the championship this year, they will do something special, in my opinion.
I see what you're saying. What you're saying is if the championship is influenced in part by one of the teams being significantly decimated, or whatever word applies there, by the coronavirus, if the Clippers all of a sudden should lose, I don't even want to attach names to this, but we all know who we're talking about, then you're saying maybe it starts to devalue it a little.
Well, let's say hypothetically, if Giannis, LeBron, AD, Kawhi, and Paul George, if those guys aren't able to play,
right,
clearly anybody got in the common sense know that the team that wins the championship didn't have to go through those guys would be lucky. I'm just hoping everybody's healthy. But like I say, if everybody's healthy, whoever wins this championship, I think it's going to mean a lot more than one championship.
Now, I'm with you on that, or in this case, maybe you're with me. Either way, we're together. Jay Will, let me come to you here. We talked about Milwaukee. We talked about the Lakers. We talked about the Clippers. Those are the three teams we talk about all the time. Give me another team that you could see winning the championship.
Oh, winning the championship.
Is there any? Do you see any other team?
I don't see. I thought you were going a different way with that question, Greeny. I don't see any other team besides those three winning championships. I see teams that can make little runs here or there. But when it comes to, I'm just going to be real with you. Those are the three teams that I think have the best probability to win a championship. Could another team find themselves in a championship, maybe coming out from the East, potentially, maybe Boston, maybe Miami. But I still have one of the teams from the West winning a championship. So those are the three contenders. Nobody else, in my opinion.
Charles, Boston.
I got two sleepers for you.
Yeah.
In the Eastern Conference, the Philadelphia 76ers. But I'm going to tell you something.
Wow.
The one team in the Western Conference, if they get Nurkic back and Zach Collins, nobody's going to want to see the Portland Trail Blazers. They got, arguably, other than Klay and Steph, the best backcourt in the NBA. Whiteside's been playing pretty good all year. But if they get Nurkic and Zach Collins back, nobody's going to want to see the Portland Trail Blazers.
And if they get in, they would probably play the Lakers in the first round.
Hold on, Greeny. I want to clarify right now. Chuck, are you saying that those two teams could win a championship, or are you just saying that they're sleepers?
Those two teams could win the championship.
I love it. I have to leave it there because I'm out of time. Charles Barkley, you are the best. Thank you so much. Be well, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me, guys. Be safe.
You take care. Charles Barkley, right, Jay guys. Williams, phenomenal. Meanwhile, coming up next year and part of a busy day in sports, we'll have First Take and then SportsCenter, NFL Live, The Jump at 4 o'clock hour with the three shows there, J&J and Highly Questionable, Around the Horn, SportsCenter after that. I've got the 2-hour special primetime tonight from 9 Eastern until Scott Van Pelt takes over with SportsCenter at 11. Much more on many of the NBA's most famous voices arguing against coming back to play. Stephen A., Max, and more. Top of the hour for First Take right here on ESPN.
This is how it was. it can feel that way again, but in a different light. Commissioners and athletes will talk about the return and the role of sports as the country transitions from lockdown and looks for social justice and change. On the SportsCenter special, The Return of Sports.
Tonight, and I'm privileged to be the host, it's a two-hour special on social justice, the role sports can play, and much more. Interviews with, among others, Adam Silver, Gary Bettman, Don Garber, Rob Manfred, Kathy Engelbert, and Roger Goodell. Starts at 9 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. Here's a little bit of my conversation with Matt Ryan, who started a GoFundMe to help black communities in Atlanta.
Well, you know, I think it's tough to put your finger on it. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think the climate of the world right now and what we've gone through the last handful of months, but also, you know, the videos that we've seen these last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks have just been ones that, you know, can no longer be ignored. And I regret that it's taken me this long, you know, to get into the discussion. It's something that I wish I would have done earlier and would have been a better, you know, teammate and listener. But we are where we are, and the timing is, you know, what it is right now. And so my commitment is to try and be the best teammate, friend, advocate for community that I can be moving forward.
And he has also, as I mentioned, put his money where his mouth is. He donated $500,000 to that GoFundMe. As of last check, which was yesterday when I recorded that interview, it had raised over $1.25 million to aid various areas of the black community in Atlanta, and I'm sure it will wind up raising a lot more. That's the special tonight, 9 o'clock Eastern time, with practically every commissioner from all the major sports in this country and much more. We hope that we will see you then. In the meantime, First Take starts right now.